Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire reread podcast. My name is Harrison.
I'm Madison.
I'm Brooke.
And we are the Readers on the Wall. Okay, guys.
Matt is texting me, and he's like, "Are you almost done?" And I'm like, "We haven't even started yet."
Oh my gosh!
I'm getting looks.
I bet. All right. Well, here. Why don't we segue into our chapter? How about we do that? Okay. And I got a summary prepared that I'm going to go through with you guys
Excellent.
In a moment. Okay.
You always have the best summaries, Harrison.
I try.
It shows.
What's kind of funny is since we've been trying to like get together and do this for a little while now, every single time I'm like, okay, let me reread that chapter. And then like I work on the summary and I've written the summary like 4 times now. Okay, here we go. So it's not chapter 17. It's chapter 15. So A Clash of Kings, chapter 15, Tyrion 3. We're going to be trying to stick to our original, the last format that we did before we went on break. I'm going to be kind of giving a whole summary of the chapter, and then we'll kind of go through it point by point, just chatting about as we go along. So here we go. This is the chapter summary. Tensions rise as Cersei taps her foot against the stone floor, waiting for Varys to arrive at the small council meeting. A slanderous letter from Stannis Baratheon has begun to surface amongst the low lords in Westeros. It claims that Cersei's children are not fathered by Robert. It's not fathered by Robert, but by her brother Jaime. I mean, could you imagine such slanderous lies, guys? There's no way that's true, right?
Oh,
I know.
I just can't believe it. I couldn't believe it either.
Cersei demands that every letter is found and that it should be burned, and anyone speaking of these vicious, terrible lies have their tongue be removed. Tyrion has quite the opposite approach. The song has been sung, the wine is spilled, the wench is pregnant. When you tear out a man's tongue, you are not proving him a liar, you're telling the world that you fear what he might say. What a crazy good line, by the way. Just pointing that out. Very good line. And while Tyrion wants to basically do nothing and let the rumor turn into old news, Littlefinger proposes a counterattack. A rumor of their own passed around through the use of Littlefinger's brothels. While Cersei proposes that Selyse Baratheon fathered her daughter by her brother, which is very clever of her, I guess, Littlefinger believes that a more dramatic approach is needed and names that Patchface be the father. Cersei jumps on this idea. I know, right? Dirty. Cersei jumps on this idea, and Tyrion leaves feeling that the matter is settled and his hands are clean. After avoiding a run-in with Lady Tanda, who is trying to marry her daughter off to him, and getting dressed with his new helper, Podrick Payne, he meets with the Smiths of King's Landing. Tyrion upends a bag and drops a three-linked chain on the floor, and commands that every smith in the city needs to be making chain links. When I ride up the Street of Steel, I want to hear hammers ringing day and night. While the purpose of the chain is shrouded in mystery, the smiths begin to voice their concerns. Cersei commands us to build armor and weapons. We don't have enough iron, and one of them even tells them that this kind of work is like totally beneath me. I'm not even going to do it. Tyrion makes quick work of these excuses with such things as, don't worry about it. Ask Littlefinger, he'll get you the money. And hey, if you don't do that, I'll throw you in jail. Tyrion departs to a litter to carry him through the city as he broods on both Renly and Stannis Baratheon, both of them claiming to be the king. They arrive at a brothel, and Bronn questions if Shay is keeping him satisfied. Tyrion replies that he has quite the appetite, and that this is the brothel that the king frequented. Joffrey? Bronn questions. No, Robert. But now that you say that, maybe I should set up my 13-year-old with his first hooker. He enters and we meet Shataya, a woman from the Summer Islands, who recommends her daughter, Aliyaya, to which Tyrion accepts. She leads him up to her room, and he's told to enter into a wardrobe to find what he seeks. Now, I know we're really excited to see like an X-rated version of Coming to My Castle, but it just leads to a secret tunnel underneath the city where Varys is awaiting. As they talk of spies and which ones are loyal to who, most of them to Varys, by the way, and they talk about the tunnel itself. The tunnel was dug for another hand of the king, whose honor would not allow him to enter such a house openly. As they come out the other side into a stable, Tyrion plans to ride off to go and see Shay. Tyrion questions Varys on who gave the information about the incest to Stannis. Varys very smoothly denies it, that it was him, and shifts the blame to Littlefinger, which is a very classic move on both their parts. With this information in mind and a cloak to hide his face, Tyrion tells Varys that I feel as though you are the best friend I have in King's Landing. And sometimes I feel you are my worst enemy. How odd. I think the same thing as you, Varys says. And that is chapter 15, Tyrion 3. I've read this chapter, like I said, I read it every time we plan to do the show. So I've read it like 8 times. And, every time I read this chapter, it just gets better and better. I think
it's a strange chapter to come back on. It's strange to me because it's one of those chapters where it feels like nothing happens, yet tons of stuff is revealed. Does that make sense?
Oh, I
agree. It's stuff that we already knew, kind of, but it's just being confirmed and reiterated. It's like George is telling us, like, hey, this is important. Pay attention. So, like, nothing really progresses with the plot, but a lot is like either revealed to us or reminded. Like, it's important, but not necessarily like plot driving. Does that make sense? Or do you agree?
It wasn't like a hefty, complex chapter, but we still, like, if you hadn't learned it by now, you know it now. Like, if you hadn't figured things out by now, you know it now.
It's like, okay, let me catch you up. Like, if you weren't aware, here's what's happening.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, it's just Tyrion goes to one meeting, he goes to another meeting, he goes to a brothel, he sneaks out. That's all the chapter really is. And it's just conversation. This is a very conversation heavy chapter. And we
love it.
There's some great characterization in this chapter, actually. Even like let's go back to just the very first meeting. So you got Cersei, you got the small council, minus Varys meeting up, and they're all talking about this letter that Stannis sent around. You know, Stannis had the intention of, look, I now know about this incest between Cersei and Jaime. I'm not gonna make the same mistake that Eddard Stark made and keep quiet. I'm gonna tell everybody. And I mean, he's even telling the small folk about it, like,
yeah, when, literally everybody,
right? Yeah, when they talk about who had the letter, they're mentioning like these small lords, like, you know, they only rule over a very tiny portion of land in Westeros. And I mean, Stannis kept to his word. He's going to tell absolutely everybody. Anybody who can hear it is going to hear about it. And I'll say this one thing I really like about this scene. I love how restrained Tyrion is throughout this whole chapter or this whole meeting. There's so many moments where like someone will say something and then we just get his thoughts, you know?
I think this is a great example of Tyrion's brilliance, of him being such a wordsmith and so clever. But this is a chapter that shows him showing restraint. And that to me is what makes him so smart, is that he can be clever, but he knows when to just listen and take things in. And I just love it.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just cool because we see both sides of it. You know, we see his first gut reaction to whatever was said to him through his thoughts. And then we get to hear his response, which is more calculated and more purposeful in what he says instead of just his gut reaction to it. And it's cool that he can, you know, there's plenty of people on this planet, I'm sure we've met, where it's like, wow, you literally say anything on your mind. Like you don't filter it. You don't think. You just kind of say it.
Right.
But Tyrion does have that restraint, at least for now, to, you know, be a wordsmith and know exactly what to say. I wanted to ask you guys, what did you think about Cersei in this whole meeting? Because I'll admit I was not. Well, okay. There's two things that I noticed about her. When it comes to her denying the letter, I feel like she's not really denying the fact that she's sleeping with her brother.
No, I just how, like, dare he call her out about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like everything she says, she's not saying like, oh, me and my brother never slept together. It's like, it's more like, it's like, how dare you even accuse that? Like, you can't even talk to me. Like, you know, I'm so high up here that these rumors shouldn't even be allowed to be talked about. You know, I can do what I want. And you guys have no say in what happens to it.
Yeah. And I feel like she does a pretty good job, too, of, like, diverting him. Being like, hey, okay, never mind about that. Like, what about the fact that, like, he has all the power of Storm's Inn behind him and Highgarden, House Redwine, and, like, all these people. Like, she just kind of does a good job of diverting it from the attention from her to, like, wow, maybe we should be focusing more on what Renly's doing over here. And, like, I think it's a great early example of how smart she is and how she is controlling things even early on.
See, now I just have a slight counteract to that. I think this meeting kind of shows us that while I think Cersei can be smart at times, I don't think she's being very clever in this scene.
Okay.
I feel like when they're trying to figure out, like, okay, what do we do? Like, you know, how are we going to fight this? You know, first she's like, oh, just, you know, burn all the letters, cut out everyone's tongue. And then when they're like, oh, let's start a rumor, she's immediately like, let's just say that she's sleeping with her brother. You know, like.
Here's a new idea.
To me, it was like she got so flustered when it came to, oh, how dare he? Like, she couldn't even think of a good way to counteract this letter. Like, she just reacted and that was that. And that's totally not her.
Right. She was overly emotional in this moment. And
I feel like this is a scene or a encounter that wasn't really translated to the show. And I wonder if they did that on purpose or if it was just a scene that didn't make the cut. But it definitely, like, doesn't contribute to, like, the Cersei that Lena Headey cultivated.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think we're not seeing Cersei in her prime in terms of this meeting. I think she is just a little over emotional.
I think she's just trying too hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Two other things about this meeting. One thing, Maester Pycelle is the biggest kiss ass in all of King's Landing.
So true. Because
literally, like Cersei's talking, you know, cut out their tongues, burn all the letters, and he's just like, ah, very prudent. Great idea.
He's just such a queen's man, you know, like if it were anyone else, it would almost be honorable to be like such a devout queensman. But with him, it's just gross and creepy.
Right.
And the other thing, so we've talked about this before where Littlefinger is kind of like that guy who says that really inappropriate joke at the very wrong time.
Right.
You just kind of give him that, like, you know, it's like, oh, okay.
It's like, okay, we need you here because you're the only kid that can fix the computers, but, like, we all hate you. They realize he's necessary for some reason, but he's still, like, oogs everybody out.
Yep. I know. He's like that guy where, like, you just get out of church and he's like, dude, I totally banged this chick last night. It was so cool, blah, blah, blah. And you're just like,
dude, wrong place, wrong time. Wrong place, what are you doing?
But
you're making everyone uncomfortable.
I feel like Littlefinger kind of went a little higher up in the asshole section here. Cause when he's talking about, okay, we need to figure out a rumor. What should be the rumor? Okay, let's say that Patchface was the father with Lady Selyse and that, you know, her, you know, to create Stannis' daughter. And then then Maester Pycelle says something like, wait a minute, like his daughter is deformed, but not anything like that. You know, it was because of Grayscale or something like that. Right. And then Littlefinger like makes a joke where something along the lines of like, oh, everyone will be asking about the gargoyles on Dragonstone. And we'll just say it's his daughter, like statues of his daughter or something. And I'm like, dude,
that's rough. Like, that's pretty low.
That's pretty low to be talking about the deformity of children as a joke. I mean, I was just like, dude,
yucky. Like,
no class.
Don't go there.
Negative class. I was not impressed with him. So we get through that meeting. Tyrion, it's kind of funny. I feel like Tyrion was like, proposes his idea, then they go with Littlefinger's, and Tyrion's just like, you know what? I got other things to do. I'm kind of done with this right now. I'm
too busy for this.
and he heads off. And one thing I've noticed throughout this chapter with Tyrion, he has probably three or four moments where he makes a comment in his mind about, like, you know what? It's not bad being royal. Like, when he walks out of the meeting and Bronn's waiting for them, he makes a comment like, oh, were you waiting for me and to lead me to my next appointment or whatever? And, you know, Bronn's like, you know what? Fuck you. Like, it's just, let's get going.
Yeah, or when he got announced at the meeting in the Hand's Tower, he's like, I like that.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's like, it feels like a crossroads for him, for sure, because he's like, just came off of this, you know, discovery adventure, kind of spending time with himself and traveling, you know, the kingdoms and going to the wall and coming back and the meeting the hillsmen and fighting in this battle. And he's just kind of like on this journey of self-discovery. But then he like settles back in and he's like, well, maybe this suburban life isn't so bad after all. So it's like he's kind of going through a midlife crisis or something. Like, do I want to be this guy who goes on adventures and has this, you know, sowing his wild seeds kind of life? Or do I like this suburban life, like, you know, having a day job and having people that answer to me? So it's kind of interesting to watch him go through this like self-discovery moment or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Like you said,
go ahead, Harrison.
Very different. He's doing something very different than what he was the whole of last book. And I'm just kind of curious if it's like kind of going to his head just a little bit. You know, he's like, oh, like people are respecting me just because of my position. You know, I don't have to earn it. I don't have to say something clever in order for people to shut up and listen to me. It's just, oh, you're the hand of the king. Like, here's your respect. I have to give it to you. You know,
I was going to say, like, even though he was a Lannister, he's still a dwarf and everybody, you know, makes fun of him, looks down on him and everything. And now being the hand of the king, he has this new power and they can't really do that. So I'm sure he's enjoying that a little bit.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's interesting you say that. So if we think back to his very first chapter, we discussed and talked about when Tyrion comes down from the library in Winterfell and he meets up with the Hound. And him and the Hound kind of have this sparring of words. And we were commenting on, like, it's interesting that the Hound can say that to him and there's no, like, consequences to it. And Tyrion could say things like that to him and there's no consequences to it.
Yeah.
You know, but like, it's like, okay, like if like some other knight said those things to the Hound would just kill him right out.
Right. It's like because of their, like, they both have high station, but they both also have like things that make them underdogs in a big way. Mm-hmm. And it kind of equalizes them in a way. Like we know that Tyrion is higher ranked than the Hound. Like, he's higher standing, higher regarded, whatever. But like on like an eye to eye level, I think they just really relate to each other. And right. Like, it's a very interesting dynamic they have, because, you know, like Tyrion says, like, all bastards or all dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes. Like, I think it's the same thing with like the, you know, what is his name? Sandor. Like, it's the same. And it just kind of gives them this common ground. That was an interesting dynamic. And I love how that played out on the page.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I just feel like Tyrion's kind of leveled up in a sense now. Like, I don't think he's going to be hearing people making fun of him anymore.
Because right.
He's the hand of the king.
He's the hand of the power, king. You know? Like, that's a massive. Yeah,
right.
Like, I mean, that's literally like second in command. Like, you don't really get much higher than that. So
right.
That's a massive upgrade, because being a Lannister is something. But being Hand of the King and a Lannister, like, that's almost as high up as you can go in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I'm interested to kind of see, you know, how much any humiliation or any side talking about Tyrion happens while he is Hand of the King. I know the small folk do some at some point, but that's just politics, right?
Right.
And we'll kind of see how it goes later as it goes on. So let's see. So Tyrion heads off. We do get to meet Podrick Payne in this chapter. This is his first appearance, and he's quite a bit younger in the books than he is in the show, which is just kind of the same situation for every character, really.
Sure. In the show, yeah. He looks like he's like 27.
yeah, most definitely. And I can't really remember a lot about him in the books. I just know he's super shy and everything, but I'm interested to see where he goes as we keep reading.
I do like show Podrick, though.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. He's a good little guy. fun fact, the actor who plays him and the actor who plays what's his name? Sir Roderick Cassell, I believe. Their father and son.
Huh. Aww.
There's a fun fact. Yeah, the guy with the beard, the really long beard chops.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yep. Interesting. Roderick. Yeah.
Okay. So they head into the Hand of the King, you know, like, place, and the Smiths are there waiting for him. He talks. So what's really interesting is in the first section of this chapter, we're in Tyrion's mind. We get to see his thoughts. We get to hear, you know, anything that pops into his head and how he filters it out. I'm kind of curious. I want to reread this again, but we're in Tyrion's mind, but we're never actually told what this chain link is for.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, because he posts, you know, he shows it to them. So this is what I need to do. But this is what I guys want you to make. But we never actually, it's never revealed to us what it's actually for. So I'm kind of curious how did George like kind of cloud that from us? How did he prevent us from, you know, not seeing it or without it being so obvious? You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, Tyrion didn't think like, you know what? I'm not going to focus on that thought. I'm not going to worry about that. You know, like somehow he did it to, so it came off very well. Okay, let's see. Let me see where we're at. If that's the, another note. So after they go through, all the Smiths are kind of telling them all their complaints, like, oh, Cersei needs us to do weapons and, mm-hmm. you know, we need this and we need that. And, I think it's interesting that, the Smiths are basically like, hey, Cersei told us to do this. If we don't do it, we're going to get our hands smashed.
Right.
Tyrion is like, wow, nice. Okay, way to be so kind to the workers, Cersei. But the thing is, to close out the meeting, he's basically like, hey, do what I tell you or I'm going to throw you in jail.
Right.
And it's like, okay, Tyrion, I feel like...
sometimes you got to lay down the... You just got to get things done, even if it means threatening people. Okay, mm-hmm. I get that. I do that to my kids all the time.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. Then we get the great ruse of riding to a whorehouse to prevent people to know that he's going to go sleep with a whore. I don't know, you know, a specific one.
You do you, boo.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, okay, you do like, you. Whatever works for you, Tyrion, I guess. But all right, whatever works.
I like, though, that we get just the subtle hint of the city unrest that is building.
Ooh,
just by the fact that Tyrion mentioned that, you know, he's done everything he can to try and feed the city, but people still look at him every time he goes out.
Well, yeah, because as he's riding through it, like, he's, you know, the first thing he does, he's thinking about Renly and Stannis, and he's like, okay, they both want to have the throne. How can I use that against them? What can I do about that? And then he starts thinking about, like, you know, all these great things that he's done for the city. He's trying to feed them. He's basically saying, like, hey, don't build catapults. Don't build this.
Right.
Go out and build fishing boats. You know, we need to get food into the city. And he's trying his best to calm this unrest. But there's definitely contention brewing, which is a great foundation to lay down for the riot that's going to happen later in the books.
Hmm.
Let's see. So, yeah, so they arrive outside of the brothel. I think it is very strange of Tyrion just to be thinking about, like, how can I set up my nephew with a hooker? Like,
yeah,
that was just very like, I don't know. Maybe it's just a, you know, back in the day type of thing, but
maybe because I'm like, listen, I have a niece, like she's 13. I've never once been like, ooh, who would be a cute boyfriend for her? Is that weird for an aunt, uncle, like niece, nephew? Is that normal? Like, am I doing this wrong?
I feel like everybody in the castle is just like, he's so damn tense. Like, what can we do?
That's probably true. It's true. Like, I will tell you that at that point in the show, like when Tyrion was like actively trying to hook him up with hookers, I was like, dude, you're not wrong. Like, try anything. Calm this boy down.
Pretty much.
Like, that's gross because it's a kid, but in my mind, I'm like, anything. Try anything. He's crazy. He's a psychopath.
Jesus. all you guys. Anyways, so yeah, basically Tyrion's like, hey, you guys can go out and, you know, get your groove on. Just leave one guy here to meet up with me afterwards. So we go into the place, he meets up with Shataya. She recommends her daughter Aliyah. They go off and Tyrion ends up in the tunnel. So here's one thing I want to talk about before we close out. So Varys mentions that this tunnel was actually built, like a hand of the king had this tunnel built so that he could visit this specific brothel. And I think we know who actually built this tunnel, by the way. Doesn't
what
say
do you think?
But I'm pretty sure we can figure it out. So I went through and I did a little research, just a quick little summary of all the previous Hands of the King within the last little while. So you got let me think. So you got Owen Merriweather. This was back when Robert Sebelian began. He eventually resigned because he was resigned and exiled because he didn't contain Robert's Rebellion. It actually, you know, it occurred and he basically got fired for that. It's like, you were supposed to keep all this calm. I was supposed to be crazy and kill all these people, dude, and you didn't contain it. So it's your total fault. Now, he was only hand of the king for about a year. We don't know a ton about him, but for him only being hand of the king for under a year or close to it, I don't know if he had enough time to get that tunnel built and have it actually be worth his time. Next up was John Connington. There's a strong evidence that he is gay. And he was only in office for another year as well, so it's pretty unlikely he did it. The next one after that was Carlton Chelsted. He resigned because he opposed the Mad King of burning people alive and, you know, being just a general terrible person.
We can't have that, though. Get him out of there.
So he was burned alive.
Impeached.
he was also only Hand of the King for a year as well. After that was Wisdom Rozart, and he was only Hand of the King for about a fortnight.
Well, here's the thing. When it comes to this, you got to start asking, is it me or is it you? if you're losing all of your Hands of the King in, you know, a year or less, it might be you, buddy.
Pretty much. After that was John Arryn. Now, just knowing what we know about him, I don't know.
He's a good bloke.
He's kind of a good bloke. I would say he was more focused on figuring out what was going on in King's Landing at the time. He was reigning in Robert. And I mean, heck, they just established their own kingdom. You know, like, they overthrew the king. Robert's the new king. I doubt John Arryn had a lot of time to have a tunnel built and to go visit whores very often. But
he was busy. Let's put it that way.
Pretty much. I think
Robert kept him busy.
I think out of all the Hands of the Kings we talked about, I think he has the highest chance, but I still think it's pretty dang low. Now, the last Hand of the King, this was way back before the first one I talked about, Owen Merriweather, was the one and only Tywin Lannister. So it's talked about that basically Varys is like, this tunnel was built for a Hand of the King who believed, you know, he couldn't come out here openly because his honor wouldn't let him. So that's definitely Tywin Lannister to a T. We know that Tywin is visiting with whores, because, you know, at the end of A Storm of Swords, we find out he's been sleeping with Shay for pretty much this whole time. So he's definitely into that. And kind of the other big reason, there's another time we're going to come back to Shittai's brothel. And we actually meet one of the workers there, and she has gold hair and green eyes. And her name's, I think, like something starts with an M. But it's heavily, heavily theorized that is Tywin's bastard daughter. So that's what I'm proposing, that I think Tywin Lannister did have that tunnel built. Because, I mean, he was Hand of the King for quite a while. I want to say it was 10 plus years or so. And I just find it. I found it, and I think it just reflects on Tyrion pretty heavily in this situation. You know, throughout the whole books, there's so many moments where we're just like, wow, Tyrion and Tywin are actually quite similar, even though they're at each other's throats basically all the time. And I think this is just another way that George is showing us, like, look, they're both using the same tunnel to go visit whores. Like, what does that tell you about them and them and their relationship?
Ooh, I like it.
So yeah, so that's what I'm proposing, and the thing is, I don't think we'll ever find out. I don't think we'll ever get a confirmation if that's true or not. But it's still interesting.
It's just enough that that is what makes his character work so special. Is it's little bitty tidbits like this that teach you who somebody really is and why Tyrion is like his father. Little things like this that just subconsciously and subtly plant seeds in your mind that make people feel real. Like, that's what good character work is about. Like, mm-hmm. that detail will probably never matter again, but it matters in character work. Like, that's mm-hmm. what makes it special. Like, that's why we are still talking about these books.
mm-hmm.
Right.
Pretty much. Yeah. There's still stuff to dig up. There's still interesting.
Yes. Always. Yeah,
that's awesome. So, but yeah, after the tunnel, they come out to a stable. Varys kind of gets them all set up and he heads off to go visit Shay. The only other note that I had is Varys does inform Tyrion in this chapter that Robert had, I think it says he has 8 bastard children. They all have black of hair. And I think it's just important to note that Varys knows this and he's keeping tabs on these bastard children. There's a lot of,
right.
There's a lot of moments like it's pretty confirmed that that Varys is the one who set up Gendry at the armory that he was at. Mm-hmm. He was the one who got him out of King's Landing. And he's kind of keeping these bastard children in his pocket. And I believe it's part of his big plan to basically use them to say, hey, here's the proof that Joffrey, Marcella, and Tommen aren't Robert's children in order to overthrow the Lannister regime that's going on right now. And then that leads into, you know, fake Aegon and him coming over and conquering all that stuff. But
he had a plan
early on.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's all the notes that I had for this chapter. Did you guys have any kind of last minute thoughts that you wanted to share before we wrap up for the night?
I don't think so. I think I kind of interjected as we went along, but I love your notes, and this is an interesting chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good one to come back on, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, hey, getting a little late. Probably because we just spent most of the time just chatting before we even got
there. It was so good, though, guys. Like, thank you guys for, like, putting this together and getting us back, you know, on a schedule. Like, we'll see what happens, but this was a great chapter to get back together on, and I just missed you guys, and it was so fun to chat, so thank you.
No, most definitely. So our schedules are all a little wonky right now, so we're kind of meeting whenever we can, so we're not sure exactly the next day we're gonna meet up, but we're gonna plan to do it.
But like for real, hit me up, guys. Most evenings I'm totally free. I know you guys have complicated schedules, so just keep me posted and let's try to do it more often, because it's really easy and it's really fun and it's worth it, I think. So mm-hmm. totally,
oh yeah, definitely,
let's keep going.
So sorry, I know we got to wrap up here, but I'm gonna make a confession to you guys, and I do this with a lot of stuff where I plan to do something and I know it's going to be good, but sometimes it takes me a little oomph to go do it. You know what I mean? And sometimes that happens with podcasting. I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm doing that tonight. Okay. I got
to
psych myself.
And listen, it happens to me too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like the wrong word would be like dread, because I would never, ever, ever, ever associate dread with you guys. But there's sometimes I'm like, I agree to do that tonight. But I'm telling you, the moment I get on and start chatting with you guys, I just love this. I want you guys to know that you just totally spark joy for me. And like, this is so fun. So I want to keep doing it because I need it. And I think you guys need it too. And it's good for us.
Yes.
I agree. Yes, it is. I think it's just our brains are just, you know, we're programmed to go to the path of least resistance.
And it's always true.
It's always worth it.
It's so fun.
Right.
This is like treat yourself, you know?
Yes.
It's self-care. We got to keep doing it.
That's right.
I agree. Okay, cool. I think we're gonna wrap up for the night, and I'll hop on, and we'll figure out when we're gonna meet again. Okay.
Yep. We'll see. I'll talk to you guys soon. How about that?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Have a good night. See you around.
Bye, guys. Bye.